really impressed if we have some of the breakers, which aren't those waves? The break dancers in the Olympics use music from, I wouldn't say he's the ultimate break dancer, but I would say he's probably the most famous that our planet has ever seen. I kind of feel like you've got to have some original MJ music in there.
Yeah, at the same time, though, if you're copying him, you're not going to copy his music.
Eh. You'll get compared to him.
Compared to him.
Music, not necessarily the dancing.
What type of music would they do, though? Is it like homemade beats that they have to like freestyle over?
You are asking the most uncool person in the entire world, but I would say no, because considering other events where there are soundtracks, gymnastics, you talked about synchronized swimming, those are generally pieced together. And they could be a montage of two or three songs. Ice skating is another example in the Winter Olympics. And it's a lot of instrumental, most cases instrumental, and it's pieced together, right, in montages and choreographed that way. But it's all original choreography. It's not trying to copy someone else.
True. But this is like, this is the first time I've ever seen it, so.
Yes.
Well, in the Olympics. I don't have high hopes.
The other events that we were talking about earlier made kind of these test runs in Tokyo, so in some cases in different forms, and now they've decided they're officially Olympic sports like surfing. But I was reading about surfing. It's actually not taking place in Paris, duh. Where could you possibly surf in France? But instead it's taking place way, way, way on the other side of the globe, for heaven's sakes. They're talking about, I think Tahiti is what I read. So you're, yeah, so they're nowhere near the actual Olympic Games in Paris. Isn't that fascinating?
They're lucky.
What would be the point? I don't know.
It's cooler.
Why?
On the nice beach of Tahiti.
Well, of course, but why make it an Olympic sport when you can't actually have it at the site of the Olympics?
Well, they can have, if it's in LA soon, you could have it surfing in California. Depends where the location is.
Yeah, I think it feels like the wrong place to debut it or to make it officially an Olympic sport going forward when it's not available or you can't have a venue that's available there.
I thought like skateboarding and surfing and all that, I thought it was more of X Games, you know, when they try to make that popular. So those are their Olympics.
Yep.
In a way.
They're coming to the point now where I feel like they're adding sports just for the sake of reaching alternate athletes. And would you call them all sports? I mean, would you call breaking a sport or would you call it an event? It's a little bit like NASCAR. Would you call it a sport or would you call it an event?
Ooh.
Yeah, so that's why I kind of like the word event, because then we're talking about which events are must-watch for you, and then you can kind of include whatever you want. And equestrian, is it a sport for the horse? Is it an event for the rider?
I know equestrian people, they get really defensive about the riding.
Yeah.
Because you have to maintain posture and...
Well, and I'm sure
stuff.
You have to be in great shape because you're getting jostled. It's a lot like NASCAR drivers or pilots, the Gs, the G-forces that are on your bodies. Probably not on a horse, but in a car or in a plane. Good morning to you. It's a Tuesday. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. We've got Olympics on the mind. Why? Well, because the opening ceremonies begin on Friday, and we know that LeBron James will be the male flag bearer for Team USA at 39 years old. It's kind of a neat honor for him. And there's been some speculation about the women. I think Dana on our Facebook page made a great suggestion, and I'm not even sure you could find anyone who would be more appropriate than Simone Biles, considering her Olympic history, what she's come back from after the last games in Tokyo, and now at 27, you're talking about one of the oldest gymnasts in either rhythmic or artistic gymnastics is what they're called, their official name. This is nearly unheard of in the sport, where you've got pixies as young as 12 and 13 and 14 sometimes that are competing for these Olympic jobs and Olympic spots, and yet she is still the queen, certainly for the United States, but also on the world stage. So I would love to see Simone Biles carry the flag as the female bearer. We're asking you which events and sports are must watch for you. I think breaking, I'm sold now because I just want to see what it looks like. And maybe that's the idea, is that there's a novelty to it, and so more people will be interested. The U.S. is favored to win the most medals in these Olympic Games in Paris. In fact, the only, I almost said team, well, it is Team USA, the only country that's projected to win more than 100 medals of all colors. China finished second to us in the race, the medal race in Tokyo. And so we were 1-2 always in pretty much everything. In the United States, we're maybe not going to win as many gold medals. We might not take the most gold, but expected to win the most medals overall. And there is no other country that's projected to win more than 100. So I like it. I like dominance on this world stage. And I think we do send some of our best and brightest, especially in the team sports now where you can have pro athletes who are competing in those sports. And so you can find those questions up on Twix, A-Law Radio, or our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. We've also talked a little bit about NFL training camps, and the big story that came out of Monday is that Jordan Love will not practice until he gets a new deal from the Packers. And this makes sense to me. At this point, it's not contentious. At this point, it's just about protecting him so he doesn't get hurt. So he is participating in meetings. He's there with his teammates. He's not holding out necessarily. It's just a smart move that he's not out there potentially putting himself in harm's way when they would get to padded practices. Not that quarterbacks get hit. That's the funny part. When you're a quarterback in training camp and preseason, you wear a red jersey, for heaven's sake, so nobody can actually hit you. But why take undue risks? Thing is, I've actually seen athletes, and this is just an example, tear an ACL by planting their foot in an awkward manner. I told the story a few times on the air, but when I played college basketball, one of my classmates, it was my sophomore year, one of my classmates, she had come back from a torn ACL the year before, and she and I were paired up in what was essentially a defensive drill. And so one player was dribbling, the other was backpedaling while maintaining defensive stance and trying to force the player a particular direction. Anyway, she stepped on my foot just like that, tore her ACL again. That's all it took. She stepped on my foot and the ACL went again. I've also been at a walkthrough. This is actually Oklahoma back when I covered OU and Sherry Cole. She was the coach at the time. And I remember I was watching a walkthrough prior to, I don't think it was an NCAA tournament game. I think it was a regular season game, but there's a lot riding on it. And they're in a stack in a walkthrough earlier in the day. And their star player steps out of the stack, plants her foot. Not crazy. She wasn't stomping. She wasn't even walking fast. And tears her ACL just like that. So women, female athletes are more susceptible because of the angle of the hips and the pressure it puts on knee ligaments, especially on the outside of your knee, the ACL. But still, you maybe mitigate the risk without contact. But how often do we see these types of serious injuries, especially knee injuries or even Achilles injuries, and there's no contact whatsoever? Really don't want to see Jordan Love or any quarterback get hurt. But man, the promise around Jordan Love and the excitement coming off of last season when the Packers surged to a playoff spot and then were able to win that first wild card game in Dallas. You can imagine there's a ton of excitement there. I would say another really cool storyline going into this upcoming season is, yes, Lamar Jackson and the reigning NFL MVP. And we heard John Harbaugh talk about him last hour. But how about Derrick Henry adding him to a backfield that is already one of the most dominant and has been? They focus on their run game. And I know last year they mixed it up more. They asked more of Lamar in terms of the passing game, and his numbers reflected that. But to add such an accomplished runner and a powerful runner like Derrick Henry, this is amazing. And to me, this makes their backfield even more a team to watch. And it sounds like it's a mutual admiration society. Baltimore loves Derrick Henry, and Derrick Henry loves Baltimore.
You know, it's everything that I imagine. They work here, the culture, the brotherhood that they have. Grateful to be here. Excited for the opportunity. Putting the work in now in training camp, just so the things that we want to happen will happen.
How long until he stiff arms a defender? This is one of his signature moves. I'm thinking I'll set the line at 3 games. You go an over
three
under.
3 games?
Yeah.
I was going to say 3 seconds.
Oh, 3 seconds. Well, maybe no. He wants to get his feet wet. Yeah, really cool. Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry in the same backfield. And yeah, after what Henry went through last year, now I know he had a couple of big moments, specifically the last game with the Titans, and this is a change for him. But still, that fresh start, that new opportunity, not to mention into a culture, as he points out, that's pre-established. John Harbaugh's been there for a long time. Lamar's, of course, the established quarterback. They've got a winning tradition as well. And the Titans have won at different times, right? They've been part of the AFC South. It's been a bit of a rotation over the last few years, from Tennessee to then Jacksonville briefly, and now to the Houston Texans. But with Baltimore, you're talking about a team that routinely competes to be the best in the AFC and gets pushed in its own division because the AFC North is so dang good. This is a new challenge for him. And even at 30 years old, I don't think anyone's questioning that he can still do the job.
Playmakers that we have and their abilities, you know, playing against them and watching from afar and being their teammate, I think it's pretty cool. And, you know, just excited to, you know, see what everybody does this year. And then putting the work in together through training camp on all three phases.
They love what they got from Zay Flowers last year. But how about Mark Andrews? For me, the biggest goal with him is just health the entire year. Can he stay healthy and be on the field the entire year? He's a game changer. He's a lot like a Travis Kelce. And then Nelson Agholor, Rashad Bateman, trying to think of some of the other receivers that they've got there. Deontay Hardy. So essentially there are playmakers, but yeah. Mark Andrews, Derrick Henry, Lamar Jackson, all on the same field, plus a Zay Flowers. That could be really cool. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Speaking of AFC North, we know Ja'Marr Chase of the Bengals is wanting a new contract. Well, the president the ruling family of the Cincinnati Bengals, Mike Brown, he was doing his annual lunch on Monday, and he was talking about Ja'Marr and just that they don't think the extension is in the works for this season.
Things can happen, opportunities can arise unexpectedly even, and you can put deals together. We're not going to say, oh no, we aren't going to do that deal if it's the right deal. But it's not so likely that this is the good time to negotiate. The off season is a better time for that. And we're going to try to keep focused on the football part. So I'm not going to rule anything out, but I will tell you that the die has probably been cast.
All right, so what he's saying is that we've kind of missed that window this year. In 2024, we didn't get it done in this offseason, and now we really need to focus on the football. But he was also very complimentary of Ja'Marr Chase and certainly not indicating in any way that they're willing to lose him. No, it's the exact opposite.
He's a key player. Next to Joe, he's our next one, and he knows it. We know it. This may take a while. We are going to bend over backwards to get it done. I can't tell you when, though.
So right now, kind of a goal, but not necessarily one that they're working on with any fervor or fury at this moment. Now, he sort of made a statement by skipping voluntary workouts, but I don't even think that's the case. A lot of veterans aren't there for voluntary workouts. He did make it to mandatory minicamp in June, and he went through the walkthrough portions, but no, again, serious practice, similar to a Jordan Love. He didn't take reps during team drills and didn't want to talk about it. The roster bonus that is owed to him is due on Thursday. It's kind of random, but it's the third day of training camp. So if he's there, which he should be, he gets $3.8 million, unless they would come up with a deal before then, which is, I think, one reason why it's a question for Mike Brown. that and the fact that he only does one of these annual media luncheons and then doesn't really do a lot of talking in public outside of that. But yeah, he's a key player next to Joe Burrow. They have a pre-existing history. It's continued into the NFL. He was a first round pick in 21 and he's been a Pro Bowler in these first three NFL seasons and already has franchise records for most receiving yards in a single game and a single season. So yes, keeper would be an understatement, critical for them to be able to keep him in the fold, but at the same time, wanting to do it in a way that doesn't necessarily throw all of the leverage slash balls into the court of Ja'Marr Chase. I mean, it's business, right? I mean, I don't think it's any different than any other way that this goes. But I like the fact that, again, like Jordan Love, it's not contentious at this point. Though, of course, the media, we are at times known for our flair for the dramatic. And so we, at times, can make stories bigger or kind of give them a life of their own where there's not. And I think when it comes to contract stuff, a lot of the time, so much of it is blown out of proportion. It doesn't always have to be a standoff. It doesn't always have to be a holdout. It doesn't always have to be two sides at odds. Some of it just takes time. And I say over and over, this is why agents exist, is so that it can remain uncontentious, so it could remain peaceful, and so that the player himself or the player herself can kind of remain out of it with the emotions, right? Because it's personal when it's an athlete. Gosh, it's personal for me when it's my contract and it comes to hosting radio shows. And I mean, what I make is a drop in the bucket compared to what athletes make. And so you're also talking about a ton of money on the business side for the team. So yeah, sometimes it just takes a little longer. Still to come, Kevin O'Connell and the Minnesota Vikings talking about not just Jordan Addison's arrest, but of course you may have heard last week about the death of one of their young players too. Just so sad to think about the age and gone too soon in the tragic circumstances for sure. Let's see, what else? What else? Oh, well, we're taking your responses about the Olympic events that you most have to watch, you have to see when it comes to the Paris Games that start on Friday. Trade deadline in Major League Baseball is also on the way, and it's coming up fast. And some teams that you might expect to be buyers could be sellers and vice versa. I always hold my breath and get kind of tense this time of the year because I hate that when teams divest themselves of valuable pieces, it sends a message to fans that, you know, this isn't worth watching moving forward. As much as it failed miserably for the Angels last season, I love that they decided, you know what, we're not going to be the team that trades Shohei Ohtani. We're going to go for it. Now, it went horribly off the rails not long after they committed to Shohei and decided not to be sellers at the deadline. Instead, we're buyers. But I do think that it sends a message to the fans, if nothing else. We may be woefully off base, but we're going to be aggressive when it comes to trying to win. Yeah, I mean, their moves are the opposite of the Midas touch, it seems like. And part of that is, for heaven's sakes, Mike Trout cannot stay healthy. You pay him all that money. It's hard enough to win, but to do it without one of your superstars is almost like trying to hit with one of your hands behind your back. So, although Shohei Ohtani can probably do that. Good to talk to you. Good to connect with you at A-Law Radio. Also on our Facebook page, it's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Wilson getting his right foot set on the third base side of the rubber. Now puts the ball into the glove. Looks to Jankowski at third and comes home. Swing and a drive deep into left field. Benintendi going back. It's over his head off the base of the wall. Wyatt Langford provides the walk-off single to give Texas a 4-3 win in 10 to open this series against Chicago.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Gotta love walk-offs. Certainly gotta love walk-offs if you are the World Series champions and you are desperately trying to get back to 500. That's the call on the Rangers radio network. And I have questions about the Rangers as we head toward the trade deadline in Major League Baseball. It wasn't that long ago, just before the All-Star break, and I hope it was just a vicious rumor, but this idea that the Rangers might actually become sellers in a dramatic way at the All-Star or right after the All-Star break because of the trade deadline coming up, because they're at the time far back in the standings and languishing below 500. Now they have won back-to-back games, but more than that, this is a much bigger deal, is about the division that they're in, where the Astros and the Mariners are currently tied, dead heat, and the Rangers are four games back. So with none of those teams separating themselves from the pack, the Rangers are still very much in it. And as I say, getting closer to coming back to even. So now at 48 and 52. And with the wild card, then you're talking about a much greater mountain to climb, because there are other teams in the American League that have far better records. New York and Baltimore, we've been talking about the Cleveland Guardians, who still have a four-game lead on top of the AL Central. And so, yeah, if it's not going to be the division title, it's probably not going to be a wild card for the Rangers unless something changes dramatically. But I still thought it was odd that few months removed from the World Series, there would be rumors that the Rangers were ready to blow it up. I feel like they have a ton of young talent still and have a team that can win. Now, they had some issues with their pitching staff. Of course, they've had, I would say, questionable moves. When you bring in older dudes, you got to expect that the guys with the mileage on them should be more susceptible, or could be more susceptible, to injuries. And that's certainly been the case. And I mean, the injuries are in their more recent history as well. But they still hold out hope for these guys. But they've got guys that are absolutely worth watching. We know about Corey Seager. We know about Marcus Semien. How about their rookie, Wyatt Langford, who last night had the walk-off and was, what, one hit shy of the cycle as well? Or was that...
He hit the cycle last week or 2 weeks ago?
Was it last week?
It was pretty recently.
Okay. Sometimes they all blend together in the summertime. There's only 162 games, you know? So good for Wyatt Langford, good for the Rangers, and I do hope that they keep the team intact. Unless, of course, someone is willing to take Max Scherzer off their hands. What do you think?
It's like 1 year deal. He's probably going to retire, or he should retire. He probably won't, because he loves the game.
And there's a lot of money there.
Well, I don't know. Well, he's getting paid, was it 40 something mil this
year? A lot. Monopoly money.
Yeah. So he's getting paid from the Nationals, Mets, and Rangers this year.
I guess my question is, who wants to take him?
Who's a borderline playoff team that needs someone that can just stay healthy?
What about Max Scherzer tells you he can stay healthy?
No, I'm not. Besides for his back, where he had surgery, he's a very, he guts through injuries, you could say. Whether it be blisters or neck tightness.
Hammies. Yeah.
He pitches through a lot of injuries, and some teams need that. And I don't want to say LA Dodgers, considering they're just a retirement home for injuries, but that could be an option.
They keep running rookies out there, though. The rookie that pitched last night, which I don't want to get off track before I finish with the Rangers, but Max Scherzer's listed right now is day-to-day, so that's where he is. John Gray, Nathan Eovaldi, Jacob DeGrom, is he ever going to pitch again?
He should be back at the end of the year. Hopefully. He's a good
pitcher.
I mean,
think about the deal they gave him. And what have they gotten from it so far? Six starts? Seven?
Six starts in a World Series, technically?
No, he had nothing to do with the World Series. Absolutely
nothing.
Those
six games.
Absolutely nothing. Nothing. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. So, yeah, I hope that they keep it together. I really do. I hope that they're able to give their fans a second half in which they are contention and challenge. Now, do they need to be a World Series contender to keep their fans happy? Probably not. There's still the general excitement and I think, euphoria over them finally winning a World Series. But still, you send such a drastic message to your fans when you tell them, like, hey, we're cashing in on this season. We're throwing in the towel. As for the Cubs, yeah, for them, they've already indicated to their fans that they've got a plan, and it really doesn't revolve around the rest of this year.
You know, you think about the length of a season, like, you have to make decisions basically at, like, 106, 107 games. We have to make those decisions. You know, you're not making decisions at the end of 162. So that 60-game stretch has a disproportionate impact on your decision-making, and that's the nature of it. For teams to get off to a fast start, it's the opposite way. So, yes, you know, the answer is, this is not a conversation I expected to be having, but, you got to react to it and make the best decisions possible.
Yeah, so the Chicago Cubs, according to Jed Hoyer, they are focused not on the rest of this year. And you hear him talk about it's hard to make decisions after 100-plus games, and you still have 60 games left, but you also have to focus on the future. And I obviously don't think that's the case for every team. There are a lot of teams that are very firmly focused on these next 60-plus games. But because the Cubs are 5 games under 500, or were going into last night, and are still out of wild card spot by 3.5 or 3 games, the thing is, it's not just the Cubs. If we're just the Cubs who are competing for those wild cards, I say, yeah, you're very much alive. But pretty much every team in the National League, save two, are within striking distance of that third wild card. There's just so much competition, so jostling. There's half dozen teams they would have to leapfrog in order to get that final wild card spot, if that's what they went for. And so, you know, Jed was pretty honest about the fact we had 2 months of playing poorly, and so now we're digging out of a hole. And so only thing he would say is that the moves that we might make between now and the trade deadline are not just about the rest of this season. And here's his quote: unless things change over the next week. So they're evaluating over this next week, but probably also preparing possible deals, meaning they're either dangling players or they know what they will take in return for some of the players that may conjure up offers from other teams, or that may be attractive or popular with other teams. He says, we probably won't do a lot of moves that only help us for this year. Don't! Stake in the heart if you're a Cubs fan. But yeah, they draw at Wrigley Field for Cubs games regardless. So he's not worried about fan support necessarily, but definitely is worried about the idea that if they start to divest themselves of a bunch of pieces, or if they make moves, it can't just be about this year, because likely they're not going to be part of the mix when it comes to the playoffs this season. So yeah, unless things change over the next week, Cubs fans, they probably won't do a lot of moves that only help us for 2024. In other words, we're not going all in. I hate this time for the fans that see some of their favorite players disappear, or see some of their favorite players get passed off to other contenders. It always does hurt around July 31st and August 1st. All right, online at A-Law Radio, on our Facebook page as well. Glad to have you with us. Good morning to you. Here's our latest sports update.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast. This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
We're thinking about the trade deadline, and Ryan made the point that maybe the Dodgers could use an innings eater. And certainly the Dodgers have been known to take on fat contracts. Money is not really an issue with the Dodgers organization, obvi. That might be the understatement of the year. And I was thinking about their rotation, and they do still want to have Clayton Kershaw back, and I'm hoping he's one of my favorites. I really want to see him again in 2024. I know he's antsy and he's anxious to get back out there. And one of the challenges for them is that they have one guy left in their starting rotation that was there at the start of the season. So here we are. It's late July. Is it late July? Can you say it's late July? That is crazy. Late July. Wowzers. Anyway, here it is. It's late July. And the Dodgers have one guy still standing from their starting rotation that, you know, that they used at the beginning of the year. And as much as that's rough, now Gavin Stone, he's the one I highlighted earlier. He's a rookie. He's got 9 wins. He's leading them in a couple of different pitching categories. But it also certainly underscores the inconsistency that we talked about. Now James Paxton, he was DFA'd on Monday. They called a real tough decision, but they just had this, you know, guys in and out of the lineup. But one of the positives, even as they get ready to welcome back Tyler Glasnow and Clayton Kershaw, that's supposed to be this week. They've had to try out a bunch of rookies like Gavin. And so then you've got River Ryan. Is that not the best name that you've ever heard for an athlete? In fact, he could be an actor with that name, River Ryan.
Sounds like he's on a boat. River Ryan Steamboat.
Or he sounds like he's an actor. Anyway, his name is River Ryan, and they made room for him on the roster with the Paxton move. And he actually made his MLB debut in their biggest rivalry, Dodgers and Giants, on Monday. And he allowed a single run, and it was unearned, pitched into the sixth inning. Again, major league debut, and the Dodgers won 3-2. He's 23 years old, and it goes back to a trade they made with the Padres a couple years ago, but this is his first time pitching in the bigs. He had a couple of walks in there, scattered a few hits, few strikeouts as well, so kind of a mixed bag, but mostly Dodgers won, and he managed to get into the sixth inning, giving up just the one unearned run. And so, as you can imagine, that's exactly what the Dodgers were hoping for, maybe even better than they were hoping. And maybe he can fill in a slot then in the rotation. But yeah, all smiles for them afterwards.
Oh, it was great. I mean, we want to win, right? My job out there is just to give them a chance to do so. So for us to be able to come out with a W, it's great.
It was good to kind of have some expectations on how he's going to compose himself and then it to play out as such. I thought the stuff was good. I think there's more in there. You know, all his entire pitch mix, there was good stuff. There was some stuff that was just okay. I thought he was very efficient. He was attacking. I love that.
And something new for River in his whole professional career in this run-up to making his major league debut, he's never pitched into the sixth inning. So that bodes well, too. A new role for him. And again, the Dodgers desperately need some type of stability. Who knew that it would come from rookies? Possibly another one here in their starting rotation. And so, yes, trade deadline getting closer. I look at around some of the races in baseball right now, and they make my head hurt, so it's too early to really be scoreboard watching. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Instead, we've got NFL on the brain. This is the week in which every camp is now going full speed ahead. Well, as much as you can without padded practices every single day. And for the Minnesota Vikings meeting the media, of course, they talked about the QB battle. Right now it's Sam Darnold 1 and it's J.J. McCarthy 2. That's the report, even though Kevin O'Connell's kind of wah-wah on that, just not wanting to. Why would you have to share that information? You wouldn't. But they both, Kevin O'Connell and the Vikings GM, having to answer questions about Jordan Addison getting arrested, which is not what you want on the eve of training camp.
We're disappointed in Jordan for, you know, we care about these players and we really do. And you know, we want to make sure we're doing our part, you know, for the development on the field. And the other aspect of that is the off the field and the life skills and the development of decision making and learning how important it is, you know, within our culture that we're very proud of, that our players understand personal responsibility and accountability.
Part of the reason you do so much work on character and the types of people you bring in this building is Jordan's, any disappointment we might have in Jordan has more in himself. He holds himself to a high standard, was raised by a great family. He knows the types of behaviors he needs to do to be the best version of himself, and he's kind of let himself down in that regard.
So this was DUI, and as you can imagine, it's not something they want to deal with, but I like what Quezia Adofa-Mensah has to say is that Jordan is more disappointed in himself. And so, yeah, good for these guys to get into camp. It's suspicion of DUI and he got arrested. And I think a lot of times it's better to be in a structure. But far, and I'm not making light of DUI in any way, shape, or form, one of my best friends in 2015 was killed by a drunk driver. So it's a very serious issue. And I'm flabbergasted that anyone in the NFL would even dare get behind the wheel after what happened with Henry Ruggs. It blows my mind every single time it happens. And I know that people who are under the influence are not thinking clearly, and that's kind of the point. But that to me is the most tragic and painful cautionary tale that you could ever have for a sport. And so it's gross for Jordan Addison. And I think it's better if these are temptations and tendencies, and it's better to be in camp and be in a structure and have some accountability. And that's what the Vikings will provide now. But more than that, and even more tragic, is the fact that they had to talk about the loss of a player. And we're talking about a car accident, different circumstances, but this is how fleeting life can be, especially when it comes to this type of thing. And they had a fourth round draft pick, Kyree Jackson. They have contributed to his funeral expenses, which I'm sure the family really appreciates. But this was so sad. Because there were other people in the car, a high school teammate of his, and an accident that happened in Maryland. And once again, alcohol might have been a factor, according to the police, though they don't know for sure yet. There's a 3-car accident, and there's still an ongoing investigation. So at this point, details are a little bit fuzzy. But if you hold up Jordan Addison and you hold up Kyree Jackson, and you see how much worse it can be. And again, it's rough for the Vikings to in any way try to defend Jordan. Not that they are. They just believe in his character. But then also having to answer questions or even address the loss of this young football player who had so much promise.
To get that phone call and know that, you know, not only Kyree, but, you know, two other tragic lives were lost, you know, all young adults gone way, way too early. It just leaves you heartbroken. And your thoughts and your prayers and your support for the family. And I'm so proud of this organization for how we have handled it and will continue to handle it.
So Kwezi, as well as Kevin O'Connell and Brian Flores, a couple of other coaches, will be there for the funeral. That's coming up on Friday, and they will also have a private memorial for players and staff, and the family will be in attendance for that as well. It's a stark, just a stark reminder of how dangerous it can be and how one poor decision, whether it's by you or it's by someone else, can end in such a way and can truly be the end of not just one life, but in this case, 3 young people who died. And so I hope that resonates even more so with Jordan Addison, because again, to have these two instances, and they have to comment on both of them. And even though we don't know for sure about the role of alcohol in the accident, we do know for sure that 3 young people are gone far too soon. So that's tough for the Vikings to have to start this way. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Glad to have you with us. Always good to catch up with you in the mornings. I know many of you start out early and we're able to keep you company. And we've been asking you about the events, the sports that you most want to see in Paris, in Paris. So we're calling them must-watch events. Some of you have said everything but a couple of sports. Greg said everything but equestrian and breakdancing. I don't know. I kind of feel like the novelty is there for breaking. Let's address it the right way. Jay on Twix says tennis, track and field, and swimming. Oh, gosh, I forgot about tennis, too, when I was making my list. Another one, beach volleyball, swimming, and gymnastics. Bobby says basketball and volleyball. I also do really enjoy volleyball in the Olympics. You don't get to see a lot of volleyball on TV. And whether it's the beach volleyball or whether it's the indoor volleyball, it's a great sport. Really enjoy it. Dustin, swimming, water polo, and handball. I've never really gotten into handball. Yeah, it's not. It's
there's
not
two fun. Types. There's the one you play at the park with the giant wall, and there's the handball where they actually play, where you throw the ball into the small, like, soccer net.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not. I feel like there's, if we're going to be dealing with that type of setup in the net and all that jazz, I'd rather see him in a pool for water polo. Just not really something that I've ever gotten into. And then Bruce says table tennis. Gosh, it looks nothing like the ping pong that I know they get very upset when you call it ping pong. It looks nothing like the table tennis that we play in our basements and our backyards. And when are they going to add pickleball? It's coming. You know it's coming. It has to. I'm sure they've considered it just by virtue of its popularity and its exponential growth over the past few years. So I did have Facebook open, and then I had a bit of a flashback when my computer shut down. I got a dreaded blue screen, but it was just, I think it was an update. Oh, that's also a buzzword and a bad word in computer right now. So it's back. I think it's okay. I think we're breathing. No more CrowdStrike Microsoft disaster. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Boom!